Hello and welcome. Tonight we're going to move into our last unit on contracts. And we're going to talk about breach and fulfillment of contracts. We're going to talk about remedies, what happens when a contract is breached. And we're going to talk about limitations and what a remedy can do for you. Last time, as you may remember, we spoke about third-party beneficiaries. Those are individuals who benefit from the contract, but don't necessarily have a interest in the contract directly. It's an indirect interest. We also talked about assignments and delegations. Can you assign the contract? Can you delegate the duties and the rights under that? And lastly, we finished up with our case of Fourth Ocean Putnam versus Interstate Wrecking Company. That was the hotel on the beach that got destroyed, and whether or not they were a third-party beneficiary, and the court found them to be an incidental beneficiary, not an intentional beneficiary, and as a result of that, they weren't able to get a recovery. Tonight, we're going to talk about, as we said, our last areas of contracts. We're going to talk about breach and fulfillment. What does it mean when you're not able to fulfill the contract? What does it mean when you do? We're going to talk about remedies. Remedies are monetary damages or non-monetary damages when the contract doesn't get fulfilled as a result of the breach. And we're going to talk about contractual provisions on remedies. Can you put things in the contract itself that provides a limitation? Let's jump right in. You know, we've been repeating our definition of contract because repetition is the mother of learning. And this definition is a very valuable definition, comes out of Black's Law Dictionary. It says, what is a contract? Well, if you break this down, you know everything about contracts. It's an agreement, first and foremost, between two or more parties, creating obligations that are enforceable or otherwise recognizable at law. What are the elements of the contract? Comes right out of this definition. First and foremost, there's an agreement, and it's got to be between competent parties. Remember what competency is. You got to be able to know that you are in a contract and what that means. And it's based on genuine assent. That's the element of the agreement that says you understand that you're agreeing to a contract and you agree to it. It's got to be supported by consideration. Remember, consideration, the amount is immaterial, but you have to give something for what you're getting. And it's got to be for a lawful purpose subject matter. That's usually not a high threshold to meet, but you can't do a contract for something that's illegal. And lastly, it's got to be in the form required by law. Most contracts do not have to be in writing, but certain contracts under the statute of frauds that we talked about previously do. And by the way, as we've said before, all contracts should be in writing, because that way it does away with the discussions as to whether or not people actually meant what they said. Tonight we're going to dive in and put our toe into the warm water of breach and fulfillment. What is a conclusion of the contract? It either goes one of two ways. You either fulfill it or you breach it. And in the preceding lectures we've had, we've talked about how a contract's formed, what a contract means, and what your rights and duties provided under that. Now we're going to talk about what happens at the end of the contract. Is it fulfilled or is it breached? Well, when you talk about contract fulfillment, there's the primary way you do it is discharge. You actually do what the contract says. To conclude a contract, there are three methods of contract discharge. That means the performance, So I do the contract. I do exactly what it was said in there, a discharge by action and a discharge by external causes. Frequently, those last two discharges are not a complete performance of the contract, but we'll get to those. What is contract discharge defined? Any method by which your legal duty under the contract is extinguished. So basically, what contract fulfillment is you've done what you've said you'd done, or at the very least, the other party lets you out of the agreement. What happens conversely with a breach? Breach is just the opposite. A breach is where the contract's not fulfilled, where the other party does not let you go. And this is defined in Black's as a violation of contractual obligation by failing to perform one's own promise. You either repudiate it or you interfere with the other party's performance. Simply don't do what you said you were going to do, or you tell the other party, this can't be done. And that's a breach of contract. What constitutes a breach of contract? It's the failure to act or perform in the manner in which is called for by the contract. Simple as that. When the contract calls for performance, then you have to perform. If you don't, you have breached it. What is the meaning behind breach of contract? It's a legal cause of action. If you breach a contract, you have the right to be able to seek damages from the other party. It's the binding agreement. It's the bargain for exchange. If it's not honored in the contract by non-performance or interference, then guess what? You've breached the contract and you get damages if you so seek them. What constitutes breach? To determine whether or not a contract has been breached, the contract itself needs to be examined, because that's where you will find within the four corners of that document, remember that doctrine, that what is actually been promised. This examination must look at the requirements of the contracts and if any modifications were made subsequent to the contract. And again, if that is the contract's in writing under the parole evidence rule, any subsequent modifications also have to be in writing. When does a breach occur? When a party fails to fulfill its obligation, first and foremost. Or before that obligation comes due, when they communicate their intent to fail to perform the obligation. Or it appears that they cannot perform the obligation under the contract once it has begun. The plaintiff must notify the defendant that breach is occurring. So if I see that you're breaching this, I got to say, hey, you're breaching my contract. So if you have what is called an anticipatory breach, which we'll get to in a minute, and I have a contract with you, and you turn to me and you say, I cannot perform this, I have to tell you, you are in breach of contract if you don't perform it. If you don't perform what you said you were going to do by the time you said you were going to do it, I can notify you as the party who is going to benefit from that and say, look it, you're in breach of contract. Okay. If you don't do what you say you do, the other party who is the beneficiary has to who is the other side of the contract, has to let you know. There's got to be notice of breach prior to filing a lawsuit. Damages are what generally is awarded pursuant to breach of contract, whereby if I am injured, I get monetary compensation from that by the other party. I can get equitable remedies too, whereby you can do other things. And one of the biggest equitable remedies is rescission, whereby the contract will go away and the court will say, we're either going to rewrite this, that's called reformation, or cancel it, that's rescission. But by and large, the number one remedy if you have a breach of contract, is damages, monetary damages. What's anticipatory breach? Well, obviously, if you have a contract and you say, I'm going to put a pool in your backyard, I'm a pool company, and I'm going to do it by July 15th. If July 15th comes and goes, you've had a breach of contract. Why? Because you didn't perform by the date you said you were going to. But what happens if it's May 15th and the pool company calls you up and says, you know, I cannot get the pool that you wanted to put in your backyard. The manufacturer stopped making it because they had a fire in their building. I cannot perform your contract the way that the contract calls for. This is what is known as an anticipatory breach. Why? Because of the fact that I am notifying you I'm unable to perform. When you have a anticipatory breach, the other party can go back and they can seek damages from you. You know, there can be a settlement worked out whereby instead of putting in the pool you wanted, I can give you a different pool. I can give you a pool that maybe you're just as happy with. But that is a modification of the contract. And up until that time, I have notified you that I'm in breach. That's called a repudiation. The party expressly declares that the performance will not be made when required. To constitute such a repudiation, there must be clear, absolute, unequivocal refusal to perform. Now, in the case that I just gave you, it's beyond the control of the other party. They have to notify you, have to let you know that they can't do it. Because if that May 15th day came around, no court is going to turn around and say, hey, listen, can we reform this? Can we make another deal on it? Because one of the reasons you have anticipatory breach, it gives the parties time to try out and work out another deal. But an anticipatory breach is a breach of contract. So they don't have to wait until May 15th to sue. They could sue immediately saying, hey, listen, they made a anticipatory breach and they told us they're not going to do the contract. Now, let's say I do want to work out a deal. I can waive the breach of contract. That pool company calls me up and says, hey, listen, sorry, Mr. Farley, we can't do the pool that you wanted. There was a fire in the pool place, and they decided not to make this pool anymore at the manufacturing plant. We modify the contract and give you another pool. It's just as good, it's just different shape, and it'll fit nicely in your backyard. It's actually a little bit more expensive, but we're not gonna charge any more for it. Can we do that? Well, I can turn around and waive that breach of contract because I have an original contract that calls for X pool and they wanna give me Y pool. Well, I can waive that breach and say, okay, just give me Y pool and we'll do that. And the form of that waiver has to be in the same form as the original contract. So if the original contract was in writing, we have to put the modification in writing too. And then that cures the breach. Okay. Why? Because you're going in and making another subsequent agreement. Now, the best way to conclude a contract is fulfillment. I have a contract for a pool. You put in the pool. You put in the pool I asked for. You put it in on the date that I do. Okay? Those contracts by fulfillment, discharge is given to them. Means you're done with it. You've done what you said. You fulfilled the provisions of the contract. Now, there can be triggers on these things, conditions precedent. I can say, I need that pool in my house unless it rains every day before May 15th. Those are conditions that you can put in on it. And if it rains every day, I can't hold you to that May 15th deadline. Why? because we put a condition in the contract that says you can put it in subsequent, you can put it in precedent, either one, but one of those conditions can waive or modify the contract based on the happening of another event. But they still have to fulfill it. So let's say we say if it rains every day before May 15th, the party gets it when there's 30 days of clear weather or 20 days of clear weather or a week of clear weather. And once there's a week of clear weather, they have to commence what they had to do before and have to have it done by that period. So absent the conditions, the fulfillment is the fulfillment. It's done on the date and under the terms that the contract provides. Those conditions can modify when it's done, not whether usually it does get done, although you can have conditions that do that too, but they're less likely. And overall fulfillment says I'm going to do what I said I was going to do, and that discharges the other party from their obligations. Now, what's the primary way of fulfillment? Discharge by performance. I say I'm going to put in a pool, and I contract with the Glenville Pool Company, and they put in the pool in my backyard. They say they're going to charge me $8,000 for the pool, and they're going to put it in by May 15th. If they turn around and dig up my backyard and complete all the elements of the pool and it's pristine and everything I asked for by May 15th, that's a discharge by performance. They did the pool, everything I asked for, everything in the contract by that date. Now, sometimes the time of performance is not specified in the contract. So I could be, and then it's viewed as a reasonable time, okay? But, you know, if all summer long goes by and they don't put in the pool, even though I hadn't put in a date in it, and it's customary in the industry that they'll put it in within 45 days of signing the contract, assuming that the weather conditions are all right, and they don't do that, then that could be viewed as a breach. But, you know, if they put it I signed a contract in March and they put it in April or May or June, say, guess what? That's probably going to be okay because there was no time in there. But, you know, again, if they try and show up in October and put it in, I can say, hey, listen, you waste the whole summer. I don't want the pool anymore because you didn't put it in within a reasonable time. Generally, all those things are specified in the contract. So you'll know the time of the performance in the contract. If it's not in there, it's viewed as a reasonable time. Adequacy of performance. Let's say they put in the pool, but, you know, the pool leaks, it's broken, the concrete around it is all cracked, then that is not a contract that can be discharged. Why? They didn't do what they said they were going to do. They were going to put in a beautiful pool for me that worked, that operated, that didn't leak, that didn't have cracked concrete that I'd cut my feet on all the time. So adequacy of performance is also another question that gets raised. And as long as everything in the contract is done and done professionally and well, there's no question here. But, you know, if the contract they put in is gray and I had seen a home improvement show and wanted it blue and didn't tell them that, I can't turn around and say, oh, this concrete is bad because I wanted the blue one that I saw on the home improvement show. And the guy says, well, sorry, it's not in the contract. That's not an issue of adequacy of performance. They put in the gray concrete and it's all cracked and broken. That is an issue of adequacy of performance. And I can either sue for damages or get them to come back and fix it, either one or the other, depending on what our agreement is at the end of this. Now, you can also obviously discharge by performance as you do everything you say you're going to do at the time you do. A discharge by action is when both the contracting parties get together and either cancel the contract or somehow modify it in there by means of rescission through a consumer protection law. Generally, where you have a discharge by action is a discharge by agreement, that the terms of the original agreement should end at a specified date. A mutual cancellation can happen. So if I say you don't put in the pool by May 15th in the contract, then I get my deposit back and you're not going to do the pool, okay? Because I want the pool for the summer. We can put that discharge by agreement in there. It's like a condition whereby I turn around and put in the contract, I want that pool installed by May 15th. And if it's not, I get my deposit back and you're not going to do it. Okay. Now, sometimes there's external causes that cause a contract to be discharged. Circumstances beyond the control of the contracting parties. To give you an example, as we said before, there was a fire in the plant of the pool company, and as a result, they couldn't deliver the pool I wanted. Well, that could end up being a rescission contract where it goes back, they give me back my deposit, and I don't want it. So that's basically with an external cause. There's also discharge by impossibility. Let's say the yard that I wanted to have the pool installed has a colossal earthquake and it opens up and now there's this huge ravine that you can't put a pool in, or there's a hurricane that comes by and all these trees fall down and they can't really do it because the trees got to be moved and it's just objectively impossible to do it at this time. Guess what? That can happen. If I have a contract to sell you my car and my car blows up in a fire, or I have an accident with the car and crash it, though that's impossible to fulfill the contract. And lastly, you have a discharge by operation of law, by which there's an alteration or material change made by a party. There's a bankruptcy. The statute of limitations expires or contractual limitation there. That can also limit and discharge your contract by law. Generally, that's a provision of law. That provides for operation of law. But at the end of the day, things like bankruptcy, things like statute of limitations, those things can do away with the contract too. That's all we got for this one. We're going to move on to our next discussion on remedies. And I thank you so much for joining us tonight. And I thank you for coming.